Yeah, I guess we can start. Awesome. I'm Matthew Govitz. I started working for FireEye 1 year ago when I moved to US. But most of you probably know me from SmartKit, where I'm still a data engineering advisor. So today's talk is going to be about compaction strategy, partition-based compaction strategy, which is something that's been coming up for quite some time. So what is a compaction? Just a short one. So it's a process that enables us to support immutable storage. The goal is to optimize the disk usage and, of course, purge the old expired data and keeps the data healthy in the way that it merges the updates, evicts the tombstones, et cetera, et cetera. So there are some compaction strategies which are fairly known to everybody, like size tier level and time window. And there's also a range aware compaction, which pretty much most of the work was done in 10.5.4.0, so check it out. So what are the compaction challenges? Cassandra has a read-optimized data model, but the problem is that the compaction strategy is not so much read-optimized. Usually, reads hit multiple files, and that can lead to reading multiple files. And keeping up with the writes and updates without crashing resources is, of course, a challenge. And, of course, promoting these updates through the compacted access tables. Optimizing on data disk to accommodate different use cases. So I think we have just three compaction strategies so far, which we're trying to use to accommodate any use case. But there's some use cases, for example, which are update heavy or require some deletes to be promoted quicker or have less S-tables touched during the reads and so on. So not all use cases are easily supported by the existing compaction strategies. And of course, handling the tombstones efficiently, this is always a problem. So I'll just briefly go through the existing ones and then I'll give you an idea of why I made the talk. Size tree compaction strategy, this is fairly easy. Writes are super easy on IO, cheap on IO. The compaction logic is fairly simple. What it does is basically merges the SS tables based on their size and promotes them to a bigger size SS tables. The downside of size tiered is that it doesn't handle the updates and deletes very well. And large SS tables, of course, almost never get compacted, at least not automatically. So once you get into the 500 gigs or bigger SS tables, they're going to take quite some time to get updated. And of course, with size tier, there's a fairly high number of S tables per read, especially if it's frequent updates in an area. Next one is time window compaction strategy. I think this one is also fairly simple and it's a pretty good solution for any time series data and mutable data. Writes are still fairly IO cheap. There's a ending window where most of the compaction happens, and what it does is basically runs the size tree compaction within the time window. Final SS table size is predictable because you base the SS tables on the time window, and within that time window, all the writes end up in that SS table. It's awesome for immutable time series data, but again, the problem is that any updates or deletes cannot be handled properly. And you end up with a single SS table per read, which is pretty good if you do any kind of query or a filter within that time window. Third one is level compaction strategy. This one has a lot of interesting ideas and a lot of interesting solutions, and I think it's getting used more and more as the years go by. Initially, it wasn't very well adopted. One of the reasons is that it does require a higher IO. It's fairly predictable, but it's significant compared to the size tree compaction. SS tables are organized in levels, and it does handle the updates and deletes a bit better than the size tree compaction, but there's still some issues. It's not suitable for write-heavy use case because of the write amplifications and how data gets promoted from level one to level one, level zero to level one to level two, and so on. And it does have low to moderate number of SS tables per read. This is again the same same issue. Usually it's between 4 to 12 depending on the use case. So I'll just try to explain how the level compaction works, because some of the ideology is based on this. So when you have a certain number of partition data in the memtable, and when that data gets flushed into level 0, it gets flushed into separate files. After that, the compaction kicks off and generates another set of SS tables without any overlap. And basically, this gets repeated. This process gets repeated once the L0 table SS tables get dropped, and another set of flush data happens, and then this data is again compacted with level 1 without any overlaps, creating another set of compactions for these files. And basically, the problem gets the problem is when you try to promote the updates, or you have a really heavy write-heavy use case. There's a lot of writes that happen, and one of the things that really lead to the problems is how these L1 SS tables get promoted to level 2. Basically, once you flush new data to the disk, they get compacted again to have no overlap. And for example, in this case, first two SS tables get promoted to the level 2. And there's basically a lot of writes for every flush, every time. So some of the common issues with size theory and level is that once the data gets into a large SS table, or it gets past level 3, it stays there for a long time, depending on the timeouts and the use case and the amount of data you're inserting. And with multiple updates over time, the situation gets even worse. So you can end up, especially with the level compaction, you can end up with data that belongs to a single partition across multiple levels, and basically reads always touch more than one SS table. There's also a write amplification with level compaction strategy, and of course, tombstone eviction is always a problem with any of these two. So the partition-based compaction strategy, there's a couple of goals. I think they're a bit different from what Joey's working on, but I think there's a bit of an overlap. So the goal is that we have one SS table per read most of the time. You can achieve 100%, but most of the time is doable. The goal is to push the updates and deletes faster than the existing ones, and to have predictable and controllable SS table sizes. So we don't end up with huge SS tables, and these are much easier to back up or to stream in the cluster. So how does it work? It's pretty much simpler than the level compaction. It basically uses two tiers, tier 0 and tier 1. It does have high IO requirements, but it's similar to the level compaction. The SS tables are organized in two tiers, and within tier 0, there's a size 3 compaction that's happening with the flushed SS tables. And it basically handles the updates and deletes better than size tier and level compaction. Based on the implementation, can sustain the write heavy use case, not as size tier compaction, but because of the promotion from tier 0 to tier 1. And for any cold data that's getting read from the node, you're getting served from a single SS table. And of course, you end up with a predictable SS table sizes. So if you look at the diagram, in tier 1, all the SS tables are basically flushed memtables, and these get compacted. And once you hit the requirement, they get promoted to the tier 1. Within tier 1, there's a couple of buckets, how the SS tables and how the data is getting distributed. So I'll get into that in just a second. So similar case, some data gets flushed to the disk. You end up with two SS tables, and these SS tables get size three together. And once you hit a condition of big enough of a size or time, because if some time passes and there is just a bit of updates and you want to promote these updates into the cold storage, or for example, you hit the 10 gig size of the largest SS tables, then that's a condition to promote into tier one. In tier one, they get chunked based on the token ranges. These are the brackets, and they're also getting distributed per based on the token value. So, how does this work in the tier one? That's also interesting because once they end up in tier one, there's also updates that are coming. There's also new data that's coming, and we need to handle the data in tier one so that it doesn't amplify every write. So, for example, you have a single SS table within one token bucket, and then, for example, your partition threshold and overflow threshold are 10 and 68%. You end up with new SS table that has some new data, some updated data, and once you compact these two, you basically hit both thresholds with the partition size, partition number, and the overflow threshold, which is 68%. Excuse me. So basically, you end up with a split. There's no overlap in the split, and you end up with a table with the SS tables, which are over 80% of the configured size, which is, in our case, 10 partitions per SS table. And basically, there's two checks. One is that if merge the data, there's some existing partitions, or split the SS tables into two if we hit the overflow threshold. So how to set it up? It looks fairly simple. So for tier one, we have minimum maximum threshold. So this is number of SS tables that we want to size tier over. There's also size and time. Size is the size of the biggest SS table or the time after which we run another compaction and promote it to the tier one. And within tier one, there's two things that we need to look for. One is the overflow threshold percent, and the other one is the number of partitions within a given SS table. This is not the exact number of partitions we end up within the SS table, but it's something that can give us a pretty configurable size of the SS table or predictable size of the SS table. So the current status. For any cold data, which is being promoted to tier one, we get a one SS table per read. For a standard light update use case, we get between two and three SS tables per read on average. It does have high I/O requirements. We were experimenting between level compaction and size tiering within tier zero. But size tier compaction within tier zero gave us much better results in lower I/O. There are some issues and bugs around promoting the SS table from tier zero to tier one, and of course we need to do a bunch of testing and optimizations. Questions? This GitHub repo will be public by the end of the year because we dropped some patches that for the code that's being shipped with Cassandra 0.4. So it will be public by the end of the year. Are there any questions? Yeah.
Mission.
Sorry.
Yeah. So could you characterize if this is a level of strategy that you found with an absolute level 2 and added a forcing function on data?
So it is a mix of the range of error and leveled, with leveled being only two levels. Because the biggest problem with the level compaction is that usually most of your writes end up being promoted from level one to level two almost every time. So just to eliminate that write amplification. Yeah.
Tombstone. Whenever they get promoted into the deeper levels, how are you managing that where you have these scale tombstones? Like classic level DB problem, where you have tombstones that get buried in these level 5, and you'll never ever clear them out.
So if you have 10,000 partitions within one SS table in tier 0, and you don't get any updates, and you have only one row that's been tombstone, it will stay there for quite a while, but it's not such a big deal. But of course, the same mechanism, once you hit a certain threshold of tombstones, that SS table will get compacted.
Is there a certain workload that you would just say it's a really bad idea? Like, for instance, not updates, use, what if you're updating a collection all the time?
Well, the field gets updated. Any use case that wouldn't be good, just a dump of metric data. Immutable metric data that, I mean, you still can end up with, so depending on the configuration, you can still end up with a single partition per SS table if you have wide partitions and a bunch of data, for example, for the whole day or within an hour, depending on the frequency of the data being stored. So you can end up with a single SS table with one partition, but I mean, there's time window compaction, so probably better for that.
Is there a way to do anti-compaction where you can rewind it?
No.
How much latency required for this?
Sorry?
How much percentage of latency is required for this?
It's almost as a level compaction strategy. Yeah, you can fill it up 90%. It doesn't require like 50% free disk space like size theory.
What would be the form of the major compaction in here?
So it's basically picking up all the SS tables in tier 0, pushing them to tier 1, and then going through tier 1s, looking at the overlaps and the any deleted partition or the amount of deleted partitions per SS table.
So bringing everything the bottom level, like LCS does in the major compaction?
No, it goes through the level 1 and then promotes it to tier 1. Tier 1 and then tier 0 and then promotes it to tier 1.
Can you talk more about the overflow threshold?
Sorry?
Overflow threshold.
Yeah, so if you, for example, in this use case, or in this slide, you see that there's a number of partition in each SS table. So if you merge these two, you will end up with a lot more partitions than, for example, you set, which is 10. So if you end up with 68% more partitions, you will split the SS table into two. And the only reason why you need to merge these two is because there's an overlap. There's an update of the, you can see that there's some of the partition tokens are the same.
So anything over like 68% over the partition threshold, which is 10, will trigger a split.
Yeah. So if you have 16 in the resulting SS table, it will stay the same. This is configurable, but for 100,000 partitions per SS table, it's a fairly good setting because you end up with 80%+ in each SS table and not like half. So it makes more sense to have SS table which are end up with being the similar size to what you're trying to target. Yeah.
How does this behave in the face of partitions with obscenely wide throats? Particularly if they're not well distributed. You know, you have the occasional bad actor in the midst of all your other partitions.
How does it behave? I have no idea.
Okay.
Maybe just, I mean, if you go with if you go with super wide partitions and set a single partition per SS table, you will probably end up with one huge file. I mean, it's not optimal use case anyway. So.
Yeah, that's fair.
Anybody else? Yeah.
How often is the compaction on tier 1?
On tier 1, when either you hit the promotion from tier 0. Or you hit the major compaction. So basically, data can stay there if there's no promotions from tier 0. It can stay there because there's no changes to the data. Yeah.
Would you say it's more suitable for write-heavy workloads?
Sorry.
Is it more suitable for write-heavy workloads?
Write-heavy workloads. The goal of the compaction was to basically provide the least amount of SS table, or to serve the data from the least amount of SS tables. It It does handle the workload, the write heavy workloads a bit better than the level compaction because it does size tier in tier zero. So I would say you can go with a super heavy work a write workload, but that's something that we have to really test out. There's some bugging, but there's a couple of issues that we're having with tier zero to tier one promotion, but trying to simplify it. Yeah.
Densest node that you've run the strategy on, so like, in terms of data size.
2 terabytes.
So the scale, the strategy scales pretty well into very dense nodes.
I can't say it does really well, but we need to do more testing. It does pretty good because if you understand the data model and the use case, you can end up with fairly fairly decent sized access tables, and it's controllable, so it does pretty good. Okay, if there's no other questions, thanks.
Hi everyone, my name is Asius. I'm from CELADB. I'm very happy here to share the idea of low level repair and how it works. And so, first, I will give a short introduction. So what is repair? Repair is a most important maintenance operations which detect the mismatches between replicas on different nodes and fix mismatch. Also, it's a pain point for most of the Cassandra users. What is a problems in the current implementation? I would call current implementation the partitionable. What it does is it calculates checksum for group of partitions. So in Cassandra, we have Merkle tree. We have a group of partitions in the Merkle tree leaf node. In Scylla, we split ranges. So in each subrange, we have roughly 100 partitions. The problem is that even a single row in a partition that is different will cause the whole group of partitions to be synced. Even a single partition can be very large, and not to mention a group of partitions. So this will cause a lot of unnecessary unwired data transmission. Another problem is that it's a two-stage repair. So first, do the checksum, and then use the streaming services to actually transfer the data to fix the mismatch. So we have at least two rates, one for the checksum and another for the streaming. So now I would like to introduce a row-level repair. So the idea is very simple. We just calculate the checksum for each row instead of partitions. And so once we have such checksums, we can use the set reconciliation algorithms to figure out which row is missing. So we can only exchange the mismatched rows and avoid unnecessary data transmission. Another good thing is that it's a single stage repair. So we reduce the data read from disk. We put it in a memory. And if there is any mismatch, we will use the data in the memory and use the RPC to stream the data directly without using the streaming services. So we only read the data once. So now I will go through some of the details. Here is the overview of the algorithm. So we have repair masters and the folders. So master is a node that you run the node to a repair command. And the folders are the nodes that also hold the replica of the given token ranges. So there are three major steps. The first one is to negotiate the sync boundary so that the master and the folders can agree on which ranges to work on. And so a boundary defines a range that contains a few rows that can fit in memory. And such ranges can be smaller than a single partition. So we can work on only part of big partitions. So the second major step is that the repair master get all the missing rows from the folders so that the master contains all the possible rows. By missing rows, I mean that the rows can be with the same key but with different content, or the row is actually missing. The last step is the repair master figure out the missing rows and send it to the folders so that all the nodes contains all the rows. Now I will walk through the details, how it works. So here we can see a diagram for all the components for the row level repair. So we have SS tables, and we have a row reader to read the data out, and we put it in a row buffer, and we move the rows that is within the range to the working row buffer, and then we use the RPC to actually sync the data. So at the first step, the master and folders will fill up the row buffer here until the buffer is full. So the typical size can be a few megabytes of data. And after that, the nodes will calculate the hash for each row in the row buffer and return a combined hash for all the rows. And it will also return the proposal sync boundaries to use for this specific round. So since the rows are ordered in the row buffer, the boundary of the last row in this buffer will be the proposed boundary. All the nodes will return this information to the master node. The master node will check if the combined rows and the proposed sync boundary are the same. If yes, so we can see the rows in the row buffer already synced. That's very good. We can move to next range. If not, the master will decide which COM sync boundary to use, which is the smallest proposed boundaries. That is a COM boundary to use for this run or repair. Okay? And so the next step is to move the rows from the row buffer to the working row buffer. The method is if the rows is smaller, then the sync boundary will move it. Otherwise, just leave it in the row buffer. We will fix these rows in the next round. And once the master gets this information, it will check the combined hash. If it's a match, good, we can move to the next range. If not, we will go to the next step. So in this step, the master will ask the folders to send all the hashes, not just the combined hashes. But it's not all the rows, it's just all the hashes for the rows in the working row buffer to master. With a simple implementation, would be just sending all the hashes to the master. It works, even if it's very simple, but it works very well if the difference is big. If the difference is small, we can use fancy algorithms like IBF to do the set reconciliation to get the hashes of the folders, so we can avoid sending the four hashes. And this works best if the difference is small. So after this step, the master knows exactly what rows each node has and misses. So the next step is get the missing rows from the repair folders. So the master will compare the hash in the working buffer between the master and the folder and to decide which row to fetch from the folders. For example, we have three nodes, and the first one is the master. We have row 1, 2, 3, and the second one have 1, 2, 4, and the third one 1, 4, 5. So the master will figure out, okay, I need to pull row 4 from the second node and the row 5 from the third node. And the master will get the node from the folder and put it into the working row buffer. It's in memory, of course, and also write to the rows to SS tables. So after this step, the master will contain all the possible rows. The last step is to send in the missing rows to the folders. The master will compare the hashing in the working buffer again to figure out which rows to push to the folders. The same example. So after first step, the master will contain row 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all the possible rows. And it knows that it needs to push the row 3 and 5 to the second node, and the row 2 and 3 to the third node. After receiving from the masters, the folders will write the rows to SS tables directly. So that that concludes the whole steps. After this, all the nodes, master and folders, contains all the rows and they are in sync. And we repeat until all the ranges are repaired. Okay, so I will show you some of the results. So it's on a three node Scylla 3.0 and a 3.1 cluster. It's on AWS S3, and each node has 1 billion rows, that is 1 terabyte of data. And each row is 1K in size, and we only have one row in each partition. Is basically a default Cassandra stress workload, and there is no background reader write because we only want to mirror the repair performance. And we have three test cases. The first one is zero sync, that is one of the nodes has zero data and the other two have 1 billion identical rows. The second one is already synced. All nodes have 1 billion identical rows. The last but not least is the case that it's almost synced. I think it's the most common use cases because repair is supposed to run regularly. And in this case, we have 1 billion nodes on all the nodes, but 0.1 percentage of the 1 billion row, which is different. And we compare the time to repair. So the partition level repair versus the row level repair, as we can see, we have seen significant improvement on the repair time. What is even more important is the amount of data we actually sent on wire. So this is the results for the almost synced case, and we measure the amount of data transferred and received on the master node. As we can see, less than 5% of the data is actually transferred compared to the partition level repair. So the speed up comes from three major steps. The most important one is no overstreaming. So only a very small portion of the data is synced. So we have less work to do, we have less data to read, we have less data to send. And I want to note that the test is only one row per partition. So with multi-nodes per partition workload, the result will be even better because we have more cases that the single row will cause the whole group to transmit. Another factor is before we are using the SHA crypto hasher, and now since we have more rows to hash, we are using a faster non-crypto hash XX hash, which is much faster. Another factor is we are adding more parallelism. That is, before we only repair one range in parallel, so now we repair more ranges in parallel. It's especially helpful for the clusters with very high latency because the bandwidth of repairing equals to the repair buffer size divided by the latency, but we cannot have a very, very big buffer size because first it can cause a lot of big allocations. Another one is it reduces the chances that we have identical rows for different rounds, so which will cause the four steps instead of the passes we can hit the combined hashes is already identical. A short summary with row level repair. We have much better repair resolution, improved from the group of partitions to a single row resolution. So we can avoid overstreaming, which significantly reduces the amount of data transferred on wire and reduces the repair time. The next one is that we have much less disk accesses because it only reads the data once and we use the data for both checksum and actually seen. All right, that's all I have. Any questions? Yeah.
So is this going to be built into NodeTool, or is this, how do I get access to the row-level repairs?
First of all, it's implemented currently only in Scylla right now. So what you do is just run the node tool repair command. It will just using the low level repair. You can we can also provide the option to choose between the partition or low level repair. But so far we do not see a reason to use the old repair.
Okay. What version do I need of Cassandra for this to be able to do this? It's
implemented in Scylla right now. But the reason I'm presenting here is that I think the idea can apply to Cassandra as well, because the ideas, the core ideas are pretty simple. Yeah. Yes.
So I'm gonna ask the same question I always ask.
Yes.
How does this perform in the face of wide rows?
Why
white partitions? Sorry, white partitions.
Yeah, that. And so actually, this is optimized for big partitions, for white partitions, because we can repair only mystery rows instead of the whole partitions. So you just send the rows that is mismatched. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Master node failed. Can you resume from that failed state, or does the repair start again?
Okay. So, I tried very hard to avoid the stateful state. So, basically, if repair fails, we only restart from the range where we left. So, for example, we can repair at the resolution of token ranges. Okay, if the previous one is failed, I can just resume from there. Or we can even split the token ranges into sub ranges, so we can do even better. Yes.
So I guess kind of building on the question is, so there's a OSS ticket for Cassandra, which essentially includes this at the partition level, not the row level. So the scheduler, mm-hmm. which does sub range of the single partition resolution, doesn't go row level, doesn't go that far.
Okay.
But, and the main kind of pushback that we got was around, like, you know, because right now we store state, we checkpoint basically, so that we can resume. So where are you storing that state? You said that you can resume if you get halfway through. Is that stored locally on the disk?
No, it's from the upper level tools. For example, you can just use a script or a management tool like a Cena Manager, etc., to remember which rows, because it's very easy to remember which tokens.
So it's using whatever database that tool is using.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Anyone else? Yes.
What's the impact on the overall time it takes to prepare the model? Given that you do the
pardon?
What's the impact on the total time it takes to prepare the model compared to the other strategies?
You mean the total time to complete the repair compared to the old one? Yeah, I'll show some of the numbers. That is the time difference is like almost 7 times the differences. So if you before you take same hours, now you only do 1 hour. Yeah.
Doesn't this cause too much compaction? Because you mentioned that all the differencing rows are immediately written to the SS
tapes. Yeah, this is a good question. The solution is that even if we in each round we find differences, we write the rows to the disk, we are not creating SS tables again and again, because they so we have SS per writer, which is shared between multi runs. Yeah, so for example, you want to repair a token range, we have multiple runs inside because we only work a very small part of it. All the runs will share the same SS table. Yeah, so by the way, all the code is open source, and we do hope that at some point, Cassandra, if people think this is a good idea, we can implement this in Cassandra as well. All right. Thank you.